It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, alongside Zach Cordova, Chris Carino. We got Ralph Barbieri on the sticks, absolutely killing it. Guys, it's a early Friday morning. We kind of got a bit of a mood lighting going on in the studio. It's a little bit early. I can sense some tiredness around, but we have UFC 299 to talk about. I mean, some really great fights the past weekend. Sean O'Malley, still your bantamweight champion of the world. Dustin Poirier getting a win. Michael Venom Page also having a great debut. So there's a lot to talk about. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good, man. The energy may be a little bit low, but I mean, the excitement's definitely there. That was a great card we watched last week, and we were talking about it before, and we couldn't even get the episode going. We were so excited talking about the fights last weekend. So definitely excited for this episode.
Yeah, I'm very excited. The event was awesome. It was nice kind of being on back-to-back shows last week and now this week, because we kind of got to be a part of the preview of the card last week, watch the card, and now we're kind of here discussing it. I kind of love that formula, especially with UFC, and it was a great card. Obviously, kind of what we expected. I even said it back there. This card might be better than the illustrious 300 card coming up, and it felt that way, and I felt like it delivered in a lot of ways, and some of those moments might live in infamy for a really long time, and I'm just excited to talk about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it was a historic night for the UFC, and we were talking before we actually got into the booth if UFC 299 was a little too stacked. I mean, we might talk about that a little bit later on, but either way though, UFC 299 definitely delivered on the promises that it had. One thing I did want to mention though, actually, before we get into UFC 299, because we did talk about it last week, Francis Ngannou, I don't know if he got fraud checked or something like that, but
yeah,
KO round two against Anthony Joshua.
I'm not going to say anyone here is like called that or anything.
Yeah. I wish I did.
I said lightning doesn't strike twice, Andrew.
Yeah.
I know. You're kind of right. I was like, man, this is Ngannou's night. He's going to come back. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be his crowning moment. Wow. He literally got Stipe'd. It was crazy.
Damn.
Yeah.
What a shot, too. Like, yeah, what? Wow. Just a one-timer in soccer terms, just obliterated him. I couldn't believe it. I didn't even think Ngannou can fold that way, to be honest with
no,
you.
No, to see a man that large fall like that, it's crazy. It almost just doesn't feel real when you see it. Yeah. I mean, he knocks him down and then walks him down after he gets up and then just steps in with a big right hand and drops him like it was nothing. He knew it was going to happen before it happened.
Right.
It's just... That's the difference of levels. That's the difference of levels in this boxing game, and he did what Tyson Fury couldn't.
And honestly, I don't blame you guys. We've seen Anthony Joshua go the borough over, actually, in Manhattan and lose to Andy Ruiz Jr. So there's definitely, he's not a murderer, killer. He's not an equivalent of a guy that's a destroyer. But I think he was dialed in, and honestly, that's kind of Joshua's thing. I think when he's really dialed into a fight and he really has an extreme interest in winning and wants to make a statement, he usually does. And honestly, that's not a great trait to have as a fighter and a boxer. You shouldn't have to turn it on, but when he does turn it on, and I'm assuming he'll turn it on for the Fury fight in the near future, it'll be fireworks for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. It seems like he always has a bit of a problem flipping that switch, but when he does,
And one more thing, I love Dana just being the saltiest person on earth and just being like, well, if Fury actually tried in the first fight, that's also how that one would have ended. Like, that's just, Dana just being salty always makes me, it makes me laugh.
Yeah, at the very least, Francis Ngannou got his money.
He got his bag.
Yeah, definitely.
He got the bag.
Yeah. Got the bag for sure.
You know, and a concussion, but that's besides the point. I'm sure he'll be back.
He could pay for it.
But he could definitely pay for it.
Major class by Anthony Joshua after the knockout. I mean, you saw him talking to him after the fight, saying, hey, don't stop boxing. And he'd reach out to me afterwards. We'll talk more. So I was really happy to see that from him, and I gained a lot of respect for Anthony Joshua after that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I don't think he's ever been viewed as kind of a not great fighter, someone that you kind of want to avoid. So, I mean, that only adds to, you know, just how likable he is. Yeah. But, yeah, that was that boxing event. Let's move on to UFC 299. I want to start with this main card. There actually was some pretty good prelims. Curtis Blaydes getting the win over Jalton Almeida, making my parlay hit. I was praying to God. I love you, Curtis Blaydes.
What up, Drew?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Made a whopping, like, $18 on that one.
Nice.
That sounds like a meal.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's better than me.
Anyway, though, huge shout out to Curtis Blaydes. I want to talk about this first fight in the main card. Piotr Jan getting the close decision win over Song Yadong. I know you were talking about Yadong's blonde hair and how it was, you know, you just felt the fit going in. You think that he was going to be able to get something done. And it was a close fight. It was a really close fight. But Piotr Jan, I think he still proved that he's at the top of the bantamweight division, or at least in talks there. So what was your guys' take from this fight? Do you think it was a convincing win? Do you think it was impressive? And where do you want to see Piotr Jan next?
I mean, I don't think anyone ever thought that Piotr Jan was not as good as he was anymore. I think he was just on that skid fighting really tough guys. You fight Merab, who tries to take you down 50 times. I mean, what more are you going to do about that? But he proved himself in this fight that he's still at the top of this division, even against like a young, hungry contender like Song Yadong. I talked about the fit and everything going in. I did end up picking Peter to win, but it just looked like Song Yadong gassed out in that one, and it looked like that the pace of that, or the, I guess maybe the experience of a Piotr Jan who's been in those kind of wars, even coming off of a war with like a Sean O'Malley, which was three rounds and just pure action the whole time. He's been in the fire and he knows how to come out of it, and he just showed it in that fight. So I would love to see him get back in the top of the ranks, maybe even fight like a Chito Vera now that Chito just lost that title shot. Both of them are trying to get back to that title shot. So I would love to see that matchup in particular.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's actually the Peter fight I didn't think about, but that kind of feels like an O'Malley Bowl almost. Maybe who can get get their second chance. Maybe the second chance bowl would be a better name for that fight. And yeah, I called Peter in this fight. I wasn't necessarily super confident in it. I was more just kind of speaking from Piotr Jan's perspective in the division, and if he really wanted to stay competitive and stay around the title, he needed to win. I felt like it was a must needed win for him. I didn't think another loss would do him very well. And yeah, he won. I don't necessarily have a ton of thoughts about this fight. I feel like this fight is more about what it leads to than what it actually was. More Peter kind of, you know, getting a second chance at more of a run in this division where maybe he didn't have the fairest of chance the first time, which is fair. And yeah, unless maybe a about the actual fight and more kind of just about what it leads to.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the implications coming out of this fight are very, very interesting. One thing I do want to highlight actually in the fight, though, I mean, you did talk about Piotr Jan's previous fight, Zach, and how he fought guys like Merab most recently. And looking at the output in this fight, it makes sense, I think, as to why Piotr Jan won this one. And that's, I think, probably because of the experience of, you know, having a bajillion strikes thrown against you, fighting Merab and a bajillion takedowns. Looking at the stat line here, Piotr Jan threw 217 strikes to Song Yadong's 192. Piotr Jan landed a bit more, but where I see the biggest discrepancy here is that for takedowns, Song Yadong was only 1 for 8 on his takedowns. And honestly, takedowns are a really taxing thing, unless if you're Merab. And even if you are, I mean, at a certain point, you start to get tired out. And I think that played a clear factor in this fight. And also,
and we talked about that aspect of the fight as well.
No, definitely. And, you know, Piotr Jan, 2 for 5 on his own takedowns. But I feel like later in that fight, he was still able to keep more pop. And he seemed a little bit fresher. And I think that's what won him the fight. But, yeah, so, I mean, I think we're all kind of in unanimous agreement that Chito would be a good next step for him, right?
Chito or even a Corey Sandhagen, I think, would be fun. Those are just fun matchups. I mean, I really want to see a Corey Sandhagen versus Sean O'Malley for a title fight. So maybe we can get Peter Yan fighting Corey Sandhagen, winner takes on Sean.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen Corey's name in the news more recently. I just feel like he's more kind of maybe relevant recently than he has been. So I think that Peter fight can work. And honestly, Sandhagen O'Malley does seem like a headlining card. Yeah, 100%.
The stylistic matchup right there is just so fun. It has fireworks written all over it.
So and their personalities are great too. Yeah, like they would be a great presser as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that Corey Sandhagen's finally starting to understand like the promotional side, I feel like, of the UFC, which took him a while to finally get there. Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of what caused some problems earlier on in his career, up until obviously he entered the cage. And, you know, it's a different story there. But I see him posting on YouTube breakdowns, reactions, stuff like that. I feel like it adds to his personality a lot more.
Definitely.
It makes him a lot more compelling in this bantamweight division for future matchups. So I think that's just something that I wanted to mention that I've been seeing recently. It's just nice change in his, you know, career.
And in general, I feel like using social media use, these guys need to kind of find the value in the fight hype that comes from that. And I feel like Sandhagen's done a great job with that. And it's kind of another indicator of the kind of time we're in right now and the generation of fighting we're in.
Yeah, you can definitely tell who is tuned into it and not tuned into it. I mean, I think guys, you know, obviously, like we'll talk about later on, Sean O'Malley, he is tapped into social media and how to use it. Dustin Poirier, I feel like, to a certain extent, a little bit.
Then Dana, you know, oil me up, daddy.
Course. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he does hold those live streams. Does get the
pink
the,
guy.
Yeah. There's so many memes out there of Dana White. Oh, dude.
He should just stop going live.
He honestly,
he's got like this thing for live where he loves going on there.
I kind of respect it, though, because he looks at them, he'll read it and like start laughing himself.
He reads just about every question. So if you have a question to ask Dana White or something absurd to say to him, just join a live stream and throw it in.
I will
there and
say
he'll
it's
read
extremely
it out loud.
Unique for an owner of a major sports organization to just regularly go on Instagram Live and just answer like any Joe Schmo's question. I kind of love it. I'm not.
And also, like, if you want to see him smile, if you go to one of his post pressers, just ask him about blackjack, and he'll be the happiest man on earth immediately, which is hilarious. Like, just any chance he gets to talk about gambling, he is just the happiest little boy.
Did you guys see the clip of him like rating? I don't know. It was like blackjack hands. It was like this one reporter asking him. It was like,
yes,
do you split or something?
He was like, would you hit on 16 or whatever? And he was like, yeah, usually, unless the cards are goofy. And he was like, what about 17? And he's like, it's insane you ask me this. And then he just goes into like a 10-minute thing about blackjack. It's like, oh, you have belts about blackjack? Really? It's like the 50th time I've heard that. Anyway, go on.
I'm pretty sure he's banned from like.
Is he actually? It's not like I've heard him say it 30 times.
Yeah.
He has that one belt. I forget what casino they made him a belt.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
I don't want it to come off like I think he's a loser, but he does come off that way sometimes.
Wait, when you're making that money. Yeah,
I mean, and also without him, this would not exist.
Exactly.
This would definitely not exist. Yeah. So, you know, obviously.
I've definitely had this talk before with, I think, my roommates in the past, just thinking about, like, commissioners or, I guess, kind of presidents of leagues and just seeing, like, you don't get coverage like Dana White does. Like, even the post-fight conferences, he's in there giving full breakdowns of the events. Like, you don't have Roger Goodell after a good Sunday of football talking about, oh, well, that was a great game in New Orleans.
Even more so, taking sides on, like, oh, like, I thought the Texans played, like, terrible. You know what I
mean?
Like he'll say that.
He'll go in there and talk about how he thought, like, a fight was bad.
He is also the promoter, which is a little different, too. Yeah. Like Adam Silver's not promoting the NBA, really. But also, I think it's, like, he's Vince McMahon.
That's what he is.
He's Vince McMahon. I think he might have finally declared victory in that conflict because in the newest WWE video game, Vince has blurred out his face, which is like that I could have a 3-hour podcast about that. But I feel like that honestly was the white flag that finally got a wave that Dana might have finally won the battle.
Okay, so I'm going to ask one question.
And we've gotten very, go on.
I know, I'm very curious, and then we're going to get back to the UFC.
You're about to ask me about wrestling, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, because I'm really curious about the blurred face. So is that, did they leave him in the game? Is it like his name is there?
Oh, wait, so it's a cutscene, because they're doing... doing it's the 40th WrestleMania this year, so they have a they have a showcase mode, which is like the storyline mode of WWE 2K games. I hate that I know this and explaining it. But basically, in one of the cutoff clips, it's Vince McMahon at the top of the ramp, like raising someone's hand, and his face is blurred out of the video.
Oh wow!
And it's like, whoa! Like that blows my mind on so many levels. Considering he's been, I mean, he was on the stock exchange floor like less than a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, things have happened since then in, you know, in the court system. But it's just, for the company that he built with his blood, sweat, and tears over the last four decades to now be blurred out of his own company's content is honestly, it's poetic in a lot of ways, to be honest with you.
It really is, especially considering the storylines that guy used to cook up. But
yeah, and considering how great Triple H has done taking over his role. He won Professional Wrestling Promoter of the Year in 2023. He did a fantastic job. And honestly, one of the reasons why a lot of people think this year's WrestleMania might be the biggest of all time, just because of how great of a job he's done. So that's my WWE tangent. Would love to get my confidant, Will Jing, in here to talk about it more. But we'll continue on with the fights. Yeah, very, very interesting kind of little development going on there in the wrestling world.
The Dana White, Vince McMahon link pipeline, I guess.
He is. He's him. Like, that's what it is. And, like, he's a little less because Vince was playing a character. Until, like, 1990-something, people didn't know Vince owned the company. He was just the announcer, and he kept it a secret. So I feel like, you know, obviously maybe playing a little bit less of a character, but we all know Dana loves every bit of spotlight he can get to.
100%. But moving back to this UFC 299 card, I want to talk about the next fight in this main card.
This was a painful one for me.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, guys. Gilbert Burns losing via KO in pretty much like the last moments of this fight against Jack Della Maddalena. And it was looking like, honestly, Gilbert Burns needed to just stay standing heading into this third round to win the fight. It seemed like he was two rounds up, and Jack Della Maddalena lands that perfect knee. Puts out Gilbert Burns. I mean, not completely, but it looked a lot like the Kamaru Usman knockout, where it was like he was out of it and realized he lost. I mean, really impressive stuff for Jack Della Maddalena. I thought he was going to have a lot of problems in this fight, and he did end up having a lot of problems in this fight, but overcoming those, which honestly I think speaks volumes to how competitive he will be in this welterweight division. But I just want your takes. I mean, you can wrap him up in emotion if you want. You can cry about Gilbert Burns if you would like. I mean, do you think that this is kind of the start of him exiting the UFC? I mean,
I think it was a character fight for Maddalena, as you just said. I felt like it showed a lot of just like what he's about, and you know, if anybody questioned that character at all or that grit, it's obviously there. I was shocked. I was speechless in the moment. I was pretty confident in Burns getting this victory, and did feel that way. It felt that way.
Through most of
the fight, it felt that way. And I didn't even think Maddalena win whatsoever. That was like not even in my mind. And the KO took me even more off guard. The context of the moment was surprising. The actual result was surprising. And definitely an interesting little treat kind of in the middle of a lot of crazy moments. This fight maybe could have gotten a little understated, but just surprising to say the least, if I had to sum it up in one word.
Man,
yeah.
Gilbert was brutal. Less than 2 minutes away, and I don't know if you guys saw after the fight that they actually came out with JDM broke his arm in that first round.
Yeah, I did see that. Completely snapped in that first round.
And just unbelievable heart and toughness from JDM to just pull out a win like that, just pulled out of the fire like that. Yeah. But Gilbert was so close. He really just needed to stay standing in those last 2 minutes, and it just seemed like the pressure got to him in that final round where JDM was kind of landing these big shots, and I think Gilbert just kind of was starting to realize that it wasn't going the way that he wanted.
I think it was just a bad decision. I think that he was starting to get pressured with big shots, and like Gilbert Burns kind of does, which I don't always love, is that when he feels pressured, he usually enters a clinch or like shoots hard for a takedown and enters sprawl. And just throughout three rounds, I think JDM finally just picked it up, and he knew, and
His guillotine.
His guillotine. He almost seemed like he panicked into that takedown shot. And that's ultimately what got him knocked out. I mean, he shot right into the knee. And it was everybody in the arena knew that he was going to try to take him back down. And it was just a perfect knee from JDM, just perfectly timed. And I even thought that it went on a little bit too long with the follow-up shots on the ground. I had already turned around and hands on my head. I turned around and I was in shock, yeah. And the fight is still going. And I feel like he took a little bit more than he needed to, but so close.
There's a couple
instances
throughout this whole main card. I will say, like, the Dustin Poirier fight, I thought Benoit Saint-Denis, like, that last punch on the ground
these are all the reasons why my dad will never get through a full UFC card, let alone a full UFC fight. He can't do it, the brutality, and these are the exact, I was even thinking it when I was watching, like, my dad would be, like, just, like, he would be squirming right now. This is horrible.
Yeah. So you don't think Chris Carino Sr. is going to be?
No, I do not think so. And you just mentioned him. It was a pretty good transition, if I can alley-oop you right now, to the next fight after that.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, actually...
Go on. I thought you were transitioning. I was just helping with it. Proceed. Proceed, councilman.
One last thing I did want to highlight with this fight. I mean... Like you said, Rich Franklin, but that's what reminds me of it. Jack Della Maddalena broke his arm exactly like Rich Franklin, then proceeded to knock out Chuck Liddell. It reminded me a lot of that in this fight, and I think, honestly, the sky's the limit for Jack Della Maddalena. I think he's honestly an instant welterweight contender.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anything to the point of where he's... stealing title shots, but I think he's in the conversation now.
Ooh, we can't go on without talking about it. The call-out of Shavkat Rakhmonov was the best call-out of the night because nobody has mentioned that man's name, and I don't blame
him. Why would you?
He's terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, my
and JDM
God.
Mentioning his name at the end of that fight and saying, I want that, because just shows how badly he wants to get to a title. He doesn't fear him. He's obviously confident in himself. If you're going to bet on yourself against a guy like Rakhmonov, I back you all the way.
That dude's an axe murderer.
Yeah, a lot of respect for JDM making that call out after that fight.
No, definitely. That was a big moment in the night.
It was good to mention that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be an awesome fight night if they set that up later on. Anyway, though, moving on, we have another welterweight fight to talk about. It is Michael Venom Page's successful debut in the UFC, walking out to The Undertaker.
So tough.
And having the robes on, everything. Honestly, I think he did it better than Israel Adesanya when he did it.
I liked his little move when the gong would go as he was walking. He'd give a little bong.
The dance, everything. It was so cool. It just felt like he was ready for the moment. And we talked about it a little
bit
before.
It showed
before.
In the cage.
Yeah, I talked about it a little before. Guys get to the UFC and they debut and they're not the same character because it becomes that much more serious. It becomes that much more dangerous. You're fighting against a bigger guy. You're fighting against a ranked Kevin Holland. And he rose to the occasion, and he was an entertainer. He looked like he could handle himself against some of the higher level guys in the UFC, and I was really impressed by him. I thought it was a really sick performance, to be honest. I was really entertained. I thought he's definitely going to be a star in the UFC.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think what's even more impressive is that Kevin Holland, I mean, we've kind of all understand Kevin Holland as somebody that, has varying interests based on who he's fighting, or varying levels of being locked in. I think this is the best we've seen Kevin Holland. I mean, not necessarily in his performance, but how serious he was taking this fight.
Yeah.
Which I think speaks to MVP that
much even
more.
In the fight, too.
Yeah.
Like, MVP was getting a little silly. Holland didn't seem like he was kind of joining him.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think back to the Derek Brunson fight where Kevin Holland was talking constantly during that fight. And MVP was starting to jaw at him a little bit, and it looked like Kevin Holland was it looked like he was really frustrated in there.
Yeah. I don't know. I have this bias where if I've seen you bare knuckle fight before, I just don't think you're going to be good in the UFC. Like, I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've seen you fight in every promotion ever, so your name's almost tainted to me in a way. We talked a lot about, like, the biggest theme, I think, of this fight when we were talking about it, kind of previewing this card, was the fast track that MVP's on, and kind of the fast track to the title that this kind of fight brings, and the win from Holland, so interesting that is your kind of debut win, because it really, once you hit a higher tier than Holland, it's pretty much all murderers and all kind of killers. Like, he is kind of the lowest level of where the real quality in the UFC is, so I think MVP could kind of hit sort of a gauntlet here on the way to the title. Obviously, that division, it's no walk in the park to get to the title, but if you wanted to start to a UFC career and positioning in a division, I think Holland is one of the best you can possibly start with.
Yeah,
I want to ask, I mean, do you guys think that because he doesn't get a finish this past weekend, maybe delays the fast track a little bit? I think that's kind of what the UFC was expecting, was kind of this flashy highlight knockout out of that fight.
The thing is, it's just Holland is such a I don't know, I feel like a tough person to finish.
Yeah.
I don't feel that way.
Yeah, at least that's totally what the performance didn't make me feel that way. One question.
Like, in other words, was it a convincing enough performance for you to say this guy deserves to be fighting in the top 10?
Yeah, I think for me at least. I at least want to see more of him. I want to see him against a tougher opponent. And off the back of that, I want to ask you guys, interesting matchup that actually MVP talked about a little bit after the fight. He was saying how a potential matchup with Wonderboy wouldn't be necessarily the greatest thing and how he might not want to see it. He could see two kind of point karate fighters just creating a bit of a boring fight. Before we move on to this co-main event, I want to ask you guys, do you like that fight or do you kind of agree with MVP and do you think it's going to be a bit boring if it gets made?
I don't know. I think that's a fun fight. I don't know. I know styles make fights and I know that they're both kind of like karate point fighters, but I don't see necessarily Wonderboy or MVP going in there and just thinking they're going to point their way to victory against each other. I think that's a fun fight stylistically. I think it could headline a fight night, honestly. I think that's definitely what I would see it as, and I don't know. To me, that's what I want. I think that's a fun fight. I would love to see that matchup.
I don't know how you put these two guys in a cage and it's boring. Like, I don't. See, I think that's that. Literally almost impossible. I know.
You say that, and then Ngannou versus Derek Lewis happens, and then it's like.
You just said Derek Lewis and Ngannou are extremely different from these two guys.
But, like, that fight on paper, though, like,
sure.
Looking at that fight, you would be like, that's fireworks. That's so
no,
amazing.
It is, yeah. But it's only fireworks until you realize Thanos is one of the two people in the fight in Ngannou. But Wonderboy and MVP, I didn't even think Wonderboy. Like, Wonderboy was not one of the names that popped in my head originally when kind of thinking about MVP past this fight, but you can't pick two. I mean, I don't know if you could pick two more exciting guys to kind of have this second fight. Obviously, maybe picking the best debut in the division with Holland, and it's just from a interest and style position, it creates so much buzz with a win like a guy like Holland. And I think another household name like Wonderboy is very important as well. I think he needs to get another opponent that everybody knows. I think more notoriety in these wins and just more people that know the opponent you're fighting and know the guys you're beating, I think is very important. And I think that'll help with the fast track. Going more to Zach's question, talking about how the maybe not the finish hurting the fast track a little bit. I don't see it that way. I feel like if they had a real expectation that he was going to walk in this one, knock him out, and that was going to be the plan, I think that would be unfair to MVP. That's too difficult. And I don't think it hurt him too much. I think the victory had enough fireworks with his fireworks that he created with his panache and things like that. And also just the buzz around it as well, I think all created enough for him to kind of get the fast track a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree alongside you there, Chris. I think that we're going to see big things from MVP moving on. And I think we'll probably see a big fight announcement fairly soon. I mean,
yeah.
He didn't take too much damage at all, so I think he's fresh, ready to go.
I saw Charles has another cut ahead of 300.
Don't even get into that yet.
Yeah,
oh, I
no.
can talk about it. I'm already,
so, yeah. I just...
I don't think it's too bad, hopefully.
I don't... Yeah.
And
no
longer...
And it wasn't even, like, I'm not even implying anything when it comes to MVP or anything, but I'm just saying that could happen where something like 300 people could be pulling in and out.
Yeah.
MVP can maybe slide in somewhere. Like, it just... Yeah. Maybe that'll be what he is. The next huge fight that gets called off for some reason in that division, he can kind of slide in.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be opportunities up ahead, and who knows what that UFC.
Yeah, we don't have a ton of time, so
yeah,
I don't want to get
moving on. Moving on.
Besides, praying for Charles Oliveira, please.
Of course,
I know.
Please
of course.
Don't pull
the Bronx.
Just get like the plastic surgery that Daniel was talking about. Figure it out. We need to see him fight.
Give the title shot to whoever he's sparring with because they keep putting the hands on him every time.
Someone just lock this guy in the apex, please.
Yeah, just lock him in the cage until it's time to fight. Anyway, though, I want to talk about this co-main event. Dustin Diamond Poirier coming out on top against Benoit Saint-Denis. There's a lot of talk heading into this fight if Benoit Saint-Denis had staph infection, and it's still up in the air if he did. He did announce and confirm that he was taking antibiotics leading into this fight, which very clearly made itself known in the second round when it looked like he had no gas whatsoever. And yeah, it was just kind of Dustin Poirier's night from there. I mean, he was able to stuff a couple takedowns, try to do a couple guillotines, which is the worst move of all
couple.
Time. Yeah.
He'll
couple.
Do it one day.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
One day, hopefully.
And then finally landing that textbook right hook,
yeah.
Getting that knockout. So, I mean, guys, are you impressed with Dustin Poirier? Where do you think he goes next? And I mean, this is really disappointing for Benoit Saint-Denis. It was a big moment for him, and just was not able to capitalize.
Listen, you bring up him talking about being dehydrated, taking the antibiotics. Yeah, that can affect your performance, but throwing 100 strikes in a first round also affects your performance of what was supposed to be a 5-round fight.
And sounds like loser talk to me.
Yeah, it just I don't think he paced himself right. I think right out of the gate he was going hard and just trying to get a finish, and antibiotics, dehydration, none of that leads you to walk with your hands down into one of the most powerful guys in this division. Justin Poirier just chinned him perfectly, but it didn't come until after 100 guillotine attempts. So maybe one day we'll see DP get four guillotine attempts.
I honestly think I love
you. Hear him yelling at him, stop with the guillotine.
Yeah, Mike Brown saying immediately.
No
more guillotines.
I was almost hoping that when he dropped and Dustin would maybe jump on top and try to grab a guillotine just while he was hurt. But
I going into this fight, we talked about it. I thought Saint-Denis would win. I didn't think Poirier was going to win. Honestly, I didn't think I cared that much either. But seeing Dustin knock him out, just two words came in my head. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. It was just awesome. Yeah. It was one of those feel-good moments that honestly snuck up on you. I wasn't rooting for it. I didn't expect it. But seeing that knockout and, you know, seeing Joe Burrow and, you know, Nick Bosa, all these people ringside, everyone's going crazy. It was awesome. It was so awesome. And honestly, I don't know if Dana in the UFC could have asked for a better moment, especially this part of his career for Dustin. Dustin just continuing to give back to this company for, you know, over a decade now, and he just doesn't seem like he has any sign of stopping yet.
No, it makes it 30 wins, really impressive stuff. And going back to that guillotine, I love how he said in the post fight interview, he's like, I'm gonna keep doing it, I'm gonna keep going for it. I just love the character from him. And I believe his next fight in the UFC will be his 40th fight overall, which is it's crazy how much, you know, just how much experience he has, not only in the UFC but just combat sports overall.
That might be against Islam too. The title. Did you see him call him out on Twitter?
I did, and Islam kind of explained it a little bit as like no one else is really free at the moment. Charles, as we said, is, you know, fighting Armin and also has a cut apparently. Michael Chandler is off in Conor McGregor land, and Conor McGregor's also, you know,
off in Conor McGregor land.
He's also in Roadhouse.
He's been living there for a minute.
Yeah, so it seems like there's not really a number one contender for Islam. So I want to ask you guys, do you like that Dustin Poirier matchup? Do you think he deserves it? Do you think it's compelling?
I think it's weird because I think Justin Gaethje is who should be next in line after knocking out Dustin Poirier. And I think the announcement at the beginning of the year was that Islam was hurt. So that's why Gaethje's not fighting him at 300, which doesn't make sense because I think like 2 days after that announcement, Islam's posting videos of him doing like some other remember exactly what it was, but some other sort of like crazy activity that someone who was injured wouldn't be doing. And I don't know how true that is now. I would like to see Justin Gaethje fight for the title first just because he did beat Dustin Poirier, but I also wouldn't hate that Poirier would get the shot. I also saw Islam kind of poke a joke at him and saying, I would love to fight him because he's got a great guillotine.
Yeah, Islam would eat that guy, respectfully. Like, just being objectively true here, he would absolutely eat that guy. I don't know. It's weird. And the division is so weird right now. I think, I don't know. It's strange because the Charles thing, I'm like really praying for, really hope. Who else did you say just now?
Michael Chandler.
Chandler,
it's just
it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. He wants that fight so bad. I don't know.
He was on Raw the other day yelling about it.
I know. I saw that. Yeah.
What?
It makes no sense.
And also, like, everybody there didn't care. And also, funny enough, the Gaethje thing, when he's jumping around for Poirier, like, I saw something on Twitter. It was like, this is how guys become friends. And it was like him knocking him out and then him cheering for him afterwards.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very much UFC friendships and how weird they are. But happy for Poirier. Yeah, I want to enjoy it for a little bit. I don't want to waste it by thinking about Islam just dribbling his head like a basketball on the canvas. And I just want to, like, enjoy it a little bit. Just enjoy that moment. Hell yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
Nah, definitely enjoy it. Dustin the Diamondback on top. Who knows? Maybe I'll buy some hot sauce after this.
Ooh!
Oh, yeah. You know it. He does make some really good hot sauce.
Shout out to Bayou.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, though, moving on to this main event. Sean O'Malley winning the five-round decision, landing 232 strikes, 230 of those being significant. And it definitely showed on Chito Vera's face. I remember Chito Vera always having kind of the viewpoint of, like, not really showing damage, even though he took a lot of punches. I think that storyline or narrative is officially over after this fight. Really impressive stuff from Sean. It was a masterclass. So I just want your guys' general takes. How impressive was this to you?
I think Sean's quality really shined through in this fight. I think you could really see just how good Sean was in this fight. Because I think even still, you know, he's had this resume that's impressive. But I think up to this fight, you could still kind of discredit him for a lot of the stuff he's done. You could say that Aljo fight that he saw one opportunity and took advantage of it, and arguably he lost that only complete round of that fight. So I think a lot of people were still kind of doubting his abilities, and a lot of people were picking Chito. I remember seeing all the people picking Chito, and honestly, he had a lot of fanfare at the press conferences and stuff too. So the Chito hype train was kind of full stop, kind of going like all the way 100 miles an hour, but Sean really composed in there. I think Sean's composure may be his greatest strength. We even saw that in the Aljo fight too. And yeah, he really just showed why he's the champion, how he's the champion. I think a lot of that theatrics after the fight when he called out Ilya, and a lot of people were mad about that, maybe thought he should have called out Merab, which, you know, fair.
I will say it's very funny though. This is like pure theory for me. I can feel like I saw like the gears turning in his head if he was going to call out Merab or Ilya.
Yeah.
And then eventually he said, I'm pretty sure he said F it. And then he just went for Ilya and said he was like, Dana needs to give me a flight to Spain.
He also kind of mentioned Merab at the end. He's like, if you guys want me to knock out Merab, I'll do that too.
Yeah.
But also, no, it's just like, I feel like it's weird now. Any fighter with some notoriety in the UFC that gets a title defense is immediately like, I need two belts. Yeah. It's like, why?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't like, what? Like, how about you win in the division? You literally just won. It's your first defense.
I know, yeah. It's just,
they all think they're Conor.
I kind of get it, though. I understand it, especially for Sean. Like, he does believe he is Conor to a certain extent. And also, like, it's such an exclusive club. There's only four double champions in the history of the UFC. To be that fifth, to be part of that club, I mean, that's, like, literally etching your name in history. So I understand the motivation behind it and why people want it so badly after a first defense, after no defenses.
You only get a certain time frame for it. And it's when you're champion. That belt could go at any time. We've seen it. We've seen champions fall that we didn't think were going to fall. So when you got your chance, you got to take your shot, I feel like.
And by the way, you two would know better than me. I feel like there's a lower promotion that a guy is like a four-division champion.
I'm not positive.
Like light heavyweight to like...
Oh, I think it was a one champion. I don't think he held them all consecutively, but I think he just won, I think, his fourth title in a different
like,
weight class.
What?
First ever.
You're
in
a
MMA.
Freak, dude.
Yeah, insane.
Yeah.
Impressive stuff.
Just like beating Gilbert Burns with a broken arm, like you're a freak. Like that's an equal level of freak.
Yeah, it's like a freak level status right there. Yeah. But one thing I do want to talk about is just the other side of this fight, and that was Chito Vera. If he had a hype train, I wouldn't call it a derailment. I would call it running into a brick wall and
quite literally
crashing back.
Yeah, with that knee. Oh,
yeah,
it sounded
like a
baseball bat to the face. And I mean, Chito not even seeming like he was rocked from it was unreal to me.
The chin is crazy. The heart that Chito Vera has is something that I don't think ever will be argued.
That knee
or taken
is
away from, but
ridiculous.
Oh, it landed
that
flush.
Knee was so crazy. Yeah, I mean, it obviously the biggest moment of the fight overall. And what round did that happen in?
Second round.
Yeah, and I think it really just kind of set the tone for how the rest of the fight was going to go, and something that was really interesting, at least for me, and makes me excited for future O'Malley performances, was it seemed like he got more efficient and better as the rounds went on. If you look at his output over those five rounds, I think his fifth round was his most effective.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just really impressive stuff. I feel like that's a stat you only really see from, like, a Max Holloway, if that. So, just really, really impressive stuff. I mean, we can talk about where Sean O'Malley goes after here. I mean, do you guys want to see the Ilya fight more? Do you want to see him fight Merab? Personally, for myself, I think he needs to fight Merab. I mean, that's a clear number one contender, but I can hear people out seeing how Ilya could make sense.
Let's defend the belt in the division. Like, let's get a little more relevancy in the division. Rob can take a break from getting picked up by girls to maybe fighting now. sorry. I also, just another point, that shot at the end that Gido took, I sent you guys that Smiling Friends meme. Yeah. Hilarious.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
just the fact that he's like, yeah, I'm just going to, like, really ruin this guy's day at the end of the fight for no reason, even though I have no chance of winning.
Shot to end it.
Yeah, it's just like, let me just ruin Sean.
Did you post that, like, Smiling Friends meme on your...
No, I just sent it to you guys.
Yeah, you sent it to us. Yeah. I thought it was, like, on your story or something.
Because it's like, he's like, oh, I think the worst part of this is over, and the guy's, like, is, like, flashing stuff in his face, and he just, like, punches him in, like, the throat, and he's like, dude, I told you I was going to do it. Dude, I told you I was going to do it. Yeah. He's like, wait, hold on. Really quick, let me just see if I can. Let me see if I can find it, because it's actually so funny. Oh my god, dude. Oh my god, it's actually. Yeah, ready? I think the biggest surprises are behind me. Dude, I warned you. I said I was gonna do that if you did that again. So anyway, that was a good. I thought that was a good way to
it
end.
It definitely felt like it. even Cheeto put on Twitter afterwards. He's like, yeah, but I landed that liver shot. You almost felt just kind of like that.
Yeah,
just like,
yeah.
Hey, well, I did get. I told you I was gonna.
That
do
is kind of
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good stuff.
Man.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
But I mean, what a performance from Sean O'Malley to
really, cap it off.
Really
yeah.
cement your name. I do agree with you though. I think he needs to fight Merab. I think if he does beat Merab, especially if he knocks him out. Give him whatever he wants. If he wants to fight Ilya, let him do it.
Do Ilya Sean in the Bernabeu where Real Madrid plays in Madrid. It would just be just blockbuster.
Electric.
Blockbuster.
I still want to see a stadium fight for the UFC. I think they could pull off, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
like
I'm curious how popular they are in Spain.
Yeah, I'm interested because I remember when Ilya won the belt, he was like front page on the news, all major newspapers in Spain. So I think it's pretty big out
and
there.
And they brought him out pre-match for a Real Madrid match after he won, and it seemed like, well, all the players were going up to him, like they were very excited about it, and it seemed like the crowd was too. So,
yeah.
And honestly, UFC is so big now that it's like they're at like Prince or Michael Jackson level, like, oh, we're going to fight, let's fight there this weekend. And they could just go sell out anywhere.
Exactly.
In the world.
That's one of the things I really love about the UFC now is the representation
of
countries, especially countries that have like one or two fighters that they love their guys more than anything. Whenever they fight in their country or say they win a belt or something, the celebration, the support, everything is just unreal. It's unlike, I feel like, any other organization. So I feel like if they do it in Spain, they could sell it out if they want. And I feel like the support, the turnout would just be unreal for that, especially for... Ilya Topuria, I think the reception would be unreal. So I would hope that one day they do a show down there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there were so many talks about UFC Africa, and obviously that time has passed with Ngannou gone, Kamaru no longer champion.
I mean, you could do it still with Duplessis and Izzy.
Yeah, you could.
I would love
you
that.
I feel
to
like
headline.
I remember though. I mean, there was a time though you could have had like the perfect event,
the Three Kings
era.
And honestly, I don't know if Izzy like I don't know. I'm not gonna say Izzy isn't that like isn't the same draw anymore, but I don't think Izzy's the same draw anymore. Like that Duplessis fight, I don't
think. I
think
that
Duplessis fight
a lot of people,
when Izzy came in the octagon, or maybe vice versa, and they were jawing at each other. The amount of hype then to the amount of hype now in that fight, and the amount of interest has diminished. I think a great amount.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think.
And the Sean loss obviously hurts the hype a lot
100%.
Too.
Yeah, I think the.
I don't know how we got here, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, I think the Pereira kind of hype wore off, like that big win that he got. So I think he needs another big moment, or just another big announcement, something to really, you know, get people interested again. But that was UFC 299, very, very fun card. Next pay per view, obviously, UFC 300, which we will be talking about as we get closer to that. One last thing I want to talk about very quickly before we wrap up. Pretty much only a sentence or two. I kind of want to just ask you guys picks. Who's going to win for the fight night this weekend, which is Tai Tuivasa versus Marcin Tybura? Tai Tuivasa, obviously, Mr. Shoei. Marcin Tybura bounced around a heavyweight division, has some big wins, also has some very big losses. I think it's a good comeback fight for Tai Tuivasa. I like him in this fight. I think he's going to win it.
I'll give a quick one. I don't have a ton of thoughts. You know, full send, Nelk, stuff like that. I think that's kind of the main reasons for why Tai Tuivasa is going to win this one. But no, also, honestly, my only real commentary here is I want to see a Shoei. So I'm going to pick him to win because I want to see him do the Shoei.
Is it in the Apex? Or is it,
does it matter?
It does.
My question is, can he do a shoey in the apex?
You can 100% do a shoey.
Like
in the apex.
Is there going to be someone in the crowd who's going to throw him a shoey?
Not a crowd. Someone in his camp would probably just have a beer.
Exactly. Like, they'll have a refrigerator next side.
Yeah,
to
maybe
sure
even like a clean shoe, too.
Oh, he does. You know he does not.
Yeah,
want
yeah,
a
you
shoe.
Know, yeah.
I will say, though, UFC Apex, I'm glad you highlighted that, though, because 5 feet smaller.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that.
Yeah.
I think that helps.
Big dudes, too, yeah.
Yeah, helps Tui Vasa a lot.
I really don't think that is a difference. Like, people say that. I really think that almost makes zero difference.
I think. I disagree with you.
Really?
I disagree as well.
We're going to get in a tangent a little bit. I'm going to try to get through this quickly. I think that's honestly, we kind of didn't mention it, but I think that's what allowed Sean O'Malley to use his distance so well and his striking so well in that event in UFC 299 and win that fight against Chito Vera, because their first fight actually happened in
at the Apex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a lot smaller of a ring. Just looking at side-by-side photos, obviously there are different perspectives, different focal lengths, obviously, but it still looks like it's a jarring difference how much distance they have between each other in the Apex versus the actual full-size octagon. Yeah.
He could, okay, first of all, Dana could easily make it the same size. Easily.
Yeah, I don't understand why they didn't.
Take maybe 4 seconds. Second of all, I think that's because they want it to be more exciting. They understand fans aren't there. They need an exciting component. They're going to make the ring smaller.
Octagon. Honestly, I completely agree with you. I think they've had other explanations out
there. What, are they not going to be able to make it the size of your, like, what are we even talking about?
I heard it was because they had already had the lighting set up in there a certain
Shut
way.
Shut up.
So
what
they
are we
basically were
about?
Just like, let's just make
Shut
the octagon,
up.
Which doesn't make sense to
makes
me.
Makes actually zero.
They make so much money. Just replace it and put an actual size.
That's the if that's true, that's a crazy explanation I've heard. Let's tangibly change the outcome and matchups of our fights just because of some lighting. Yeah. We don't want to pay an extra $1,000.
And just for the meme. Kind of for the meme, too.
Just for the hell of it, yeah.
I guess so. But anyway, I'm glad that we actually did talk about that because I was thinking about that a lot. Anyway, though, so I got tied to Tuivasa.
Tied to Tuivasa for sure.
Come on, man. Bam, bam. Tied to Tuivasa, man. Come on.
Man, we're going to look like complete idiots if he loses.
No, he's winning this by knockout. I predict a shoey with one of the nastiest shoes. And it's going to be fun. I expect a fun main event on Saturday.
We'll see. It should be very fun at the very least. I mean, two heavyweights going together should be a fun event. But I think that'll just about wrap up this episode of Pound for Pound. Huge thanks to Chris Carino and Zach Cordova for being fantastic co-hosts. Also, huge shout out to Ralph Barbieri for killing it on the sticks, laughing at our jokes. I saw you laughing back there. But anyway, make sure you tune in next week as we break down Tai Tuivasa versus Marcin Tybura, the results of that, and move on to the next UFC fight night. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.